You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much. We have a full house and a wonderful guest, a guest who is in the eye of the storm, but who is handing the ship very strongly already. Welcome, Your Excellency, Minister Luis de Guindos Jurado. The minister has been minister since December the 22nd, just before Christmas, and is in charge of the Spanish economic program, and of course is participating in the design of the overall European reform programs. He has had a vast international experience and national experience. He was already deputy minister from 2002 and 2004, vice chairman of the EU Economic Policy Committee, chief executive officer at AB Asesores, and also chief executive of Lehman Brothers Spain, among many other things. As you can see, Minister, despite the very short notice, we have a full house and people are scrambling for seats. There's huge interest in what's happening in Spain. There's also a lot of sympathy for you personally and for the efforts of Spain. And it's at a time which is critical for the European economy, for the world economy. The package that was agreed last Monday, I think, on Greece has been another major step, but these are steps. And we are all wondering how it's all going to add up. I think the basic reactions from the markets have been quite positive. As you know, the euro as a currency now vis-à-vis the dollar has reached one of its strongest points in the last few months. I think this is an indication that there is confidence that Europe is tackling its problems and the eurozone is tackling its problems. But there still is this big issue of short-term management of the crisis, you know, liquidity for the banks, trying to control the immediate dangers versus the longer-term growth agenda for Europe, because I think most economists agree, most observers agree, that unless growth can start again in a significant way in the southern European countries, the control of the debt and the financial measures are going to be temporary measures, not the measures that really solve the problem. So in that sense, I think it's particularly interesting that your title is Minister for Economy and Competitiveness, which maybe is a signal that the growth and competitive agenda is as important as the pure short-term stabilization and banking sector agenda. I remember the managing director of the IMF, Christine Lagarde, in August, I think it was, she had a speech which was reported in the Financial Times, which essentially had a key sentence saying, markets don't like debt, but they dislike lack of growth even more. And of course, indebtedness ratios are always ratios of the debt in the numerator to the GDP in the denominator, and what happens to them depends on both. So with this, let me again welcome you all. Thank you for joining us. And it's a great pleasure and honor to hand over the floor to Minister de Guindos.
Well, let me start, if I may, thanking Brookings for inviting me to share some views on the Spanish economy and the European economy. Well, you know, these are not easy times, as you can imagine. I am Minister of Economy in the middle. I don't know if it is or not in the eye of the storm, but it's in the middle of the worst recession that we had over the last 5 decades in the world economy and especially in Europe. So, you know, these are interesting and challenging times, and I think that we are going to be quite demanding, especially, you know, are going to be quite demanding for the people responsible for implementing the economic policy of the different countries. Well, I'm going to make and to put forward and to start with some remarks on the European situation. Last Monday, we approved, you know, the second bailout program of Greece, as you have mentioned before. This has been an important step forward because the alternative was much worse. And simultaneously, I think that in Europe we are going to take, you know, important measures in order to try and to put, you know, order in the crisis that we are living right now. This is not going to be easy. I have to recognize in a priori. And afterwards, I will make also some remarks on the Spanish economy and the situation of the Spanish economy and the steps that the new government that arrived in office 2 months ago have been taking to try to tackle the difficult and extremely difficult situation that, you know, we have found in the Spanish economy. Well, first of all, with respect to Europe. First of all, I think that we have some good news. Good news because we closed as I have mentioned before the bailout program of Greece. I think that the alternative, as I have said, was much worse. Default as divorces are always disorderly, and we have avoided, you know, in this case, you know, a disorderly default. And you know, I think that you know, the important point is that we are gaining time with respect to Greece. And simultaneously, I think that we are giving time to the Greek government to implement the measures that they need to return to the markets once you know, this program you know, has been consumed. But you know, the remark that I would like to make and the idea that I would like to convey to you with respect to Greece is that you know, the problem of Greece is not only a financial or economic problem; it's much more a political problem. It's a problem about the credibility of the government to deliver the measures in terms of fiscal adjustment, in terms of structural reform that the Greek economy needs in order to be back to growth and to be on track again in terms of fiscal consolidation. If Greece and the Greek government and the Greek population do not have these measures in place, And you know, the markets have not the perception and do not obtain the perception that Greece will be able to finance itself in the markets in the future, I think that is going to be quite useless. So this is the starting point. We have saved Greece. We have gained some time. But at the end of the day, you know, what we are doing with Greece will be assessed and will be valued in terms of you know, of the Greek economy to be on track, you know, and to be you know, growing again. If the Greek economy is not competitive, then we will have a problem, as you have mentioned before. And you know, there are some remarks on some you know, I would say ramifications of the Greek situation that I think that are worthwhile to stress and to review. The first one is that Greece is a small economy; it's something below 2% of the GDP of the Eurozone. And the first question that comes to our head is how, you know, an economy that is so small has created so many problems in terms of, you know, the Eurozone. The Eurozone that is perhaps, you know, the largest and wealthiest economic area of the world. And here, you know, the point that I would like to stress is that we had some governance problems in the institutional framework of the Eurozone, some evident flaws, that I think that we are going we will have to modify. We had, you know, a monetary union, but we had a monetary union with a fiscal union, even with an economic policy union. And I think that this is something that we will have to modify in the future. We have started to modify, and I think that we have learned our mistakes. You know, I was Deputy Minister of Finance of Spain in 2003. And in 2003, Germany and France breached the rules of the union. And I think that, you know, we are paying the consequences of that. You know, if, you know, the countries of reference, the benchmarks of the Union, the anchors of the Union, the European Union, breach the rules, how are we going to demand fiscal consolidation, fiscal discipline to a country as Greece? And I think that now we are paying the consequences of, you know, this decision that was taken in 2003, because we modify the Stability and Growth Pact. And this modification was in favor of the large countries. And when you bias the rules in the middle of the game, then you have to take in consideration and you have to pay the consequences of that. And I think that now we are paying the consequences of that. But this is something that especially, you know, the German government has learned in the past. Simultaneously, well, you know, to give you good news about the Eurozone, I think that there are some positive elements that we have to bear in mind. The first one, I think, that is that, we have two important governments of the Eurozone that I think that now have serious governments in place. You know, the situation of Italy and the situation of Spain has been modified. And I think that in terms of the political framework, I think that this is important. Italy is the third economy of the Eurozone and Spain is the fourth economy of the Eurozone. And now they count on, the future policies that we will have to pursue in the future. And, with orthodox governments, with governments willing to deliver, I think that, the balance of power in the Eurozone will be modified and will give rise to different possibilities in the future with respect to the alliances and the policies that can be implemented in the future. And thirdly, if you allow me to say, you are fully aware that we have a mild recession in Europe, and I think that the attention of the policymakers is changing and is switching from austerity to growth. We have made, in some cases, a wholehearted effort to reduce and to rein in the public deficit, to reduce the public debt, and these efforts, have given rise to, in certain countries, to a mild recession, as I have said. Now, I think that we have to be much more preoccupied about pro-growth policies. As you have mentioned, fiscal consolidation per se is not a policy in itself. Fiscal consolidation makes sense, especially if you are simultaneously applying other kind of policies that give rise to much more potential growth in the medium term. And the impression that I have now is that, in Brussels and in the European institutions, we have to pay, and we are going to pay much more attention to pro-growth policies in that regard. Well, this is with respect to Europe and the Eurozone debt crisis. Let me make also some short comments on the situation of the Spanish economy. Well, the new government arrived in office only 2 months ago, on the verge of Christmas, and 2 days after Christmas, I don't know if it was a Christmas gift or something, or Christmas present, we learned that we had an important slippage in our fiscal accounts. Instead of a deficit of 6% of GDP, we had something that was above 8% of GDP. Well, the new government immediately, in 4 or 5 days, took an austerity package to reduce, the public deficit by 1.5% of GDP, raising taxes, raising the personal income tax. That is something that was not very popular, especially taking into consideration that the Popular Party is a liberal conservative party that, is totally against raising taxes, but there was no alternative. And simultaneously reining in the public expenditure by 9 billion euros. Well, I think that this was totally necessary in order to give a very clear signal of the commitment of the new Spanish government with fiscal austerity. We could not, the alternative of, having a deficit above 8% without taking additional measure would have been terrible in terms of the reaction of the markets for the Spanish economy. So I think that it was a very clear signal in that regard. And it was a very conclusive and rapid reaction of the Spanish government. Immediately and afterwards, the Spanish government, implemented and approved an organic law to develop the constitutional amendment that was approved by the two large political parties of Spain after last summer. And, in that amendment, in that law decree, a lot of controls, much more transparency, has been introduced with respect to the fiscal accounts. One of the main problems of Spain, that I suppose that you're aware, is that Spain is a very decentralized economy. The different layers of the administration, when you look at, the different bodies and the different institutions, you notice that regions account for a very important percentage of the total public deficit. And, the accounts of the regions were quite opaque, and they were a main source of deviation and overruns and slippages in the fiscal accounts. So, this new regulation will set very clear rules for the regions, and especially, it will introduce a lot of clarity, a lot of transparency, to allow the central government to react just in case, in time, and before, you know, the slippages of the regions suppose an unsurmountable situation for the global accounts and the global position, fiscal position of the Spanish economy. So this was a second measure that I think that was quite important, and I think that, you know, to control and to rein in by the central government and to have, you know, transparency and information in time of the accounts of the regions, I think that is going to be, you know, another element that gives, you know, leads to the perception that, you know, the central government is going to be serious with respect to the fiscal deficit. Thirdly, you know, the week after, you know, the approval of this law, the Spanish government adopted a new regulation on the banking industry. Well, banks in Spain are, you know, important institutions, not only in Spain, but all over the world. We have one of the most efficient retail banks and lenders all over the world. But, you know, the situation of the Spanish banking industry has been affected by the bursting of the property bubble that we had during the last decade, and especially because of the credit bubble that we had in the past. So immediately the government, with you know, with the warning of the Bank of Spain, our central bank, you know, also found that we had you know, some deficits in terms of valuation of the real estate assets that the banks had in their balance sheets. Well, we decided to act immediately, and what we did was to increase the provisioning of, you know, the real estate assets of the banks in the balance sheet of the banks. So, for instance, to give you an idea, the most toxic real estate asset in the balance sheet of the banks is land. Land was provisioned by 30% with respect to the initial book value. We decided that, you know, this valuation was incorrect, and that we tried to close and to bridge the gap between the book value and the market value. So now, with the new regulation that we approved, for instance, the provisioning and the markdown of land in the balance sheet of the banks will be 80% instead of 30. So to give you an idea about the effort that this is going to suppose for the banks. This will suppose that, you know, banks will have to raise provisions by something above 50 billion. They are going to do it through the P&L of the banks. We are going to limit at the maximum possible, you know, the use of taxpayer money. And, well, and for the weak or fragile institutions that they are not able to carry out to implement this effort, what we are going to do is to force them into a consolidation process to try to get rid of these fragile or weak institutions. So the idea is not only, you know, to increase the provisioning and to mark down, you know, these assets. The idea is to have, you know, a new round of consolidation in the banking industry in Spain that will give rise, at the end of the day, to sounder, safer, stronger, and, you know, with better corporate governance lenders in the industry, in the banking industry landscape in Spain. We think that clarity and transparency are values, are important values, and that without transparency and clarity, it will be impossible to bring back confidence to, you know, the banking industry in Spain. And I think that, and I have the perception that, you know, the large lenders in Spain that are very healthy are very happy because they once for all, they will be able to get rid of the stigma that, you know, they have suffered because of the bursting of the property bubble that I have mentioned before. And finally, and this was the last piece of regulation that we have modified, and I think that, you know, this is extremely relevant to understand, you know, the future evolution of the Spanish economy. 2 weeks ago, we approved an important overhaul of the labor market regulation in Spain. Well, the labor market regulation in Spain is one of the main causes of the profound and deep deterioration of the labor market in my country. You know, no other country, even the countries with external financial assistance, has suffered the deterioration of the labor market that has suffered in Spain. To give you an idea, you know, at the beginning of the crisis in 2007, our unemployment rate was something close to 8% of the labor force. Now it's 23%. In Spain, to give you another figure, you know, more than 10% of all the jobs in the private sector have been destroyed because of the crisis. This has not happened in Greece. This has not happened in Ireland. This has not happened in Portugal. So there is something intrinsically, I would say, detrimental to the performance of the labor market in the regulation of the regulation that we had in Spain. So this was, you know, evident for the new government, and you know, 1 month and 2 weeks after arriving in office, well, we have pursued the most profound and deep overhaul of the Spanish labor market regulation. The regulation that we had in place, it was a regulation that, you know, had its roots in the Franco's time regulation. And so we decided that, you know, this regulation, and, you know, it was quite evident for all the analysts, for the IMF, the OECD, for the economists in Spain, that this regulation was behind, you know, the extremely negative performance of the labor market in Spain. So, you know, the new regulation modifies dramatically, you know, the situation that we had in the past. We have modified totally the wage bargaining process in Spain. The wage bargaining process in Spain was very centralized, was based on national and sectoral settlements. And now we have given prevalence to, you know, the bargaining process at the corporate level. And I think that this is going to be quite important in order to diminish, you know, the impact of any slowdown in activity to, you know, to in at the corporate level. It's curious, but I have seen in Spain, you know, the situation of a corporation of many companies that have, you know, a drop in activity, a drop in demand for their products of 30-40%. And simultaneously, they have to follow a settlement, a sectoral bargaining process that forces them to increase, for instance, salaries by CPI plus two. So the only way out, the only exit that they have, and the final outcome is that they have to fire the temporary workers. This is something that we have to modify. And I think that is going to be, you know, extremely important, and it's an important, you know, modification of, you know, the regulation that we had in place. Secondly, there is another problem in Spain that, you know, is this special of duality that we have between insiders and outsiders. And, well, in that regard, severance payments have been reduced according to the new regulation to give much more flexibility to the at the corporate level. Also, a new part-time contract with much more flexible than before has been approved. And we think that, you know, all in all, you know, in any aspect, in any facet of the polyhedric regulation of the labor market in Spain, what I can assure you is that the new regulation, you know, supposes a clear improvement with respect to the past. Well, these are the main steps that, you know, the new government has taken in 2 months. We know that we are living challenging times. We know that this year is going to be bad. We are going to have negative growth, 1.5 more or less, according to the Bank of Spain, in terms of GDP, minus 1.5 in terms of GDP growth. We know that, the impact on the labor market will continue to be negative and that we are willing to lose jobs this year. But what I can assure you is that the Spanish government is fully convinced that, we have to modify a lot of things. That our strategy of economic policy is going to be based on fiscal consolidation. This is something that is going to be inevitable. But fiscal post-consolidation is not the only way out. We have to complement fiscal consolidation with structural reforms. Structural reforms that, you know, are going to be needed to foster the growth potential of the Spanish economy in the near future. Times in the short term are not going to be easy. The environment that we are living is not easy, as you are fully aware. But, you know, when you review backwards the history of Spain, whenever we had, you know, a government with, you know, macroeconomic orthodoxy implemented and with an structural reform agenda, always the Spanish economy, at the end of the day, is much stronger. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the comprehensive and yet...
All right, now this is better. So we have about half an hour for discussion with the minister, questions from the floor. I will try probably to group two or three questions to gain time that way. And so I'm opening the floor. Uri, please do identify yourself. You get a mic.
Yes. Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Minister, for those remarks. The Spanish economy has seen a big deterioration in unit labor costs against Germany. It's running a current account deficit despite the recession. So my question is there a big competitiveness gap for Spain today? And what will replace, how will growth happen? What will replace, for example, the construction sector, etc.? Which sectors do you see are going to pull you out of this?
Maybe we'll take one or two others. Yes?
Thank you, Minister. My name is Juan Moreno. I'm a student from George Washington University. And my question is, you said we need a growth policy with a budget policy, and but also announced in some of the reforms, for example, 50 billion provision rising to the banks. So my question is, where are the growth policies? Where?
Any other question in the first round? All right.
Well, I think that the questions are quite similar and go in the same direction. Well, first of all, I have to say that it's true that the Spanish economy has a competitiveness problem if you look at the current account deficit. But it's also true that the current account deficit has come down from 10% in 2008 to something that is going to be a little bit below 3% this year. So we have closed the gap. And especially if you look at, the performance of the Spanish exports is extremely, extremely positive. You know, Spain is the only country in the Eurozone that, it has maintained its market share in trade, in world trade. You know, we have maintained our market share close to 2% of the total exports of goods and services. So, it's true that, we had a competitiveness problem, but this problem has been, dramatically reduced over the last, I would say, 3-4 years. But my question is that, the point that I would like to stress and to highlight is that, the improvement in unit labor costs in Spain has taken place because of a drop in productivity. Because an increase in productivity. But this increase in productivity is the consequence of a dramatic fall of employment. So we didn't have wage moderation in Spain. You can see that, for instance, last year, wages in Spain increased at a rate of 2.something%, and simultaneously we destroyed jobs at a rate of 3%. So the improvement in unit labor cost, that is the typical gauge of competitiveness in Spain, has taken place through job destruction. This is something that we have to modify. And this links to the overhauling of the wage bargaining process. In Spain, we need wage moderation as a instrument, as a lever for internal devaluation, and we have to stop the process of the destruction of jobs. So I would say that the wage bargaining process is going to be vital. Afterwards, both of you have asked about this dilemma between austerity and growth policies. And I would like to stress also, one point that I think that is important. And Spain is a very good example about growth policies. In 2007, the fiscal deficit, the fiscal position of Spain was a surplus of 2%. And in 2009, we had a deficit that it was something above 11%. So Spain is the country that put in place and pursue the largest fiscal stimulus, I would say that all over the world, for sure, all over the OECD. What was the consequence of that? The consequence of that was that, the unemployment rate jumped from 8% to 20%. So sometimes, and I think that this is quite, incorrect, we identify pro-growth policies with fiscal stimuli. And I think that that's wrong. And I think that Spain is a good example in that regard.
So I think that the real pro-growth policies have to come from the supply side of the economy. The real problem for Spain now is that, you know, we have a credit crunch, that the regulation so far was quite detrimental to job creation, that, you know, that the regions of Spain, because of the budgetary problems, had liquidity strains and they couldn't pay to the suppliers. And so, you know, we had, you know, a liquidity situation of a lot of small and medium companies that was really, really extremely difficult. No? So these are the things that we have to modify. We need, you know, to put in place fiscal consolidation. We need to give the signal that, you know, we are going to put Spain back on track of the fiscal consolidation path and that, you know, the fiscal position of Spain is going to be sustainable in the future. But, you know, this, we have to complement that with structural reforms. If we do that, I think that there is one element that can be modified that is an intangible in economics, but I think that is quite important, that is confidence. The problem of Spain is that, you know, confidence, not only outside Spain, but also inside Spain, you know, is very, 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 very low. So if we start to raise confidence on our potential and our capabilities that are huge, I think that, this intangible element that is confidence will give rise to, you know, some improvements in economic performance. And I hope that we will be able to return to the growth situation that we had in the past.
Anything about growth sectors? Which sectors?
I don't know. I don't know. If I had been told 20 years ago that, you know, a textile company, as Inditex, would become the most successful clothing textile company all over the world, I would have been quite surprised. I don't know in your case, no? So I don't know. You know, we have to be humble. No? What I can tell you is that now Spain have you know entrepreneurship, an entrepreneurship, and that it's curious, but Spain, you know, we had three of the best business schools in all the rankings in Europe and all the world in the world. No? So we have, you know, a potential and Spanish entrepreneurs and Spanish, you know, Spanish, well, managers are well educated. You know, they can compete all over the world, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And simultaneously, I think that we have a skilled labor force in certain areas. It's totally true that, you know, the bubble in the real estate gave rise to a quite, you know, with a lot of, you know, a labor force, that was, you know, quite the human, with a very, very low level of human capital. But when you look at other sectors of Spain, they are able to compete, as I have said before, and they are able to push, you know, the Spanish economies to compete, you know, in many markets. So, you know, I think that, you know, the main mission of the government is to try to deliver the structural reforms that, you know, this skillful labor force and, you know, the entrepreneurial force of the Spanish economy need in order to grow again.
All right. We'll have some more questions. I see Teresa there first and then gentleman in the back.
Good to hear that you are optimistic.
You have to use the mic.
About the prospect for competitiveness for
we still can't hear. You have to speak a little louder. Okay.
I said it's very good to hear that you are optimistic about the prospects for recovery of growth of Spain in the not so far future. I mean, personally, I think that in the short run, you're going to have a hard time because, you know, reduction in wages, much as it's needed over the medium term, will have a short-term impact on demand. But I wanted to ask you mainly about the role of the fiscal consolidation in the regions. How are you going to ensure, I mean, or what is the government doing to ensure that the decentralization does not, as it has in the past, led to lack of fiscal discipline at the subnational level. So thank you very much.
One question yet in the back there? Yes? Right. Gentleman in the middle.
Nicolas Véran at Peterson Institute for International Economics here and at Bruegel in Brussels. My question is about the banking system. One striking feature of the consolidation in the banking system compared to what has happened in Europe in the past two decades is that it has been entirely intra-Spanish. There haven't been any foreign buyers that I'm aware of. Maybe it's just ignorance from me, but it hasn't been prominent. My question is just simply, why is that? I mean, you mentioned the lack of trust and uncertainty, but at the same time, it seems such a golden opportunity for those banks, which are stronger in Europe, to expand their retail base. So I'd like to hear from you why there hasn't been more cross-border acquisitions in the Spanish banking system. Thank you.
Well, your question about the regions and the fiscal consolidation effort of the regions. Well, first of all, and I would like to put that very clear, we are not talking about re-centralization of the functions of the regions. What we are talking about is, is an effort of fiscal consolidation of the budgets of the regions. Spain, perhaps, is the most decentralized economy of the industrial world, of the OECD countries. And we are very, very happy with, this system of decentralization. I think that this has given rise to a lot of positive elements for the Spanish economy and for the Spanish population. But it's totally true simultaneously in that, over the last two, 3 years, the effort of fiscal consolidation of the regions has been much more reduced than in the case of the central government. And this cannot continue that way. Especially because now the regions in Spain, they are confronting a lot of difficulties in terms of liquidity. They have extreme difficulties to tap markets, to have access to the wholesale finance. And so the only way out is to start to rein in the public deficit. The main source of the slippage in the public accounts that we had last year in Spain is due to the overrun of the public deficit of the Spanish regions. So what is going to do the government? The government, first of all, has agreed and has reached an agreement with the regions to reach a balanced budget on structural terms in 2020. This goes beyond the golden rule that has been set in the fiscal compact of the union. Secondly, I think that the regions, because of the liquidity problems that they are suffering right now, they are totally open and they are fully convinced about the necessity of balancing their budgets. And I think that they are going to make a wholehearted effort in that regard. And finally, and this is very important because, in the past was not the case. Well, we are going to introduce a lot of clarity, a lot of transparency in the reporting of the accounts of the regions to the central government. Well, the regions are an important part of the general government in Spain. They account, as I have said before, for more than one third of the total public expenditure. So, the government of Spain has to be responsible before Brussels, before our partners in the European Union, about the total consolidated accounts of all the public sector in Spain. So we are going to have, and we have set clear, signals and clear elements and clear instruments to have information about the evolution of the public deficit of the regions, to take, the correct measures, the proper measures, just in case, without any sort of delay. And finally, let me finalize with, a political argument that I think that is important. Well, the central government is in the hands of a government supported by the Popular Party. But also, I think that in 13 regions of Spain, out of the 17 that we have, the Popular Party is running, is ruling the regions. So there is a, I would say, an alignment of interest in that regard to create a framework of fiscal discipline, not only in the central government, but also in the different layers of the administration in Spain. So all in all, what I can tell you is that we are fully aware that you know, the control of the public deficit of the regions is a vital element. It's one of the main sources of jittery of the markets vis-a-vis the evolution of the public finances in Spain. And that's why, you know, this government and many governments of the regions in the hands of the Popular Party, you know, are going to make a wholehearted effort to send a clear message of fiscal discipline to the markets. Your question about the banking industry. Well, it's totally true that the penetration of foreign banks in Spain has been quite limited. Well, in that regard, I have to say that you know, the Spanish banks you know, are regarded as very good in terms of retail banking. That you know, retail banking is one of the advantages of the Spanish economy, because the Spanish banks, they have been quite I would say aggressive and quite you know, competitive in retail banking. So it, for them, was quite difficult, despite the fact that the entry barriers in the banking industry in Spain have disappeared. No? Well, we have the presence of some banks. There are some, you know, for instance, Barclays, BNP. But it's totally true that, in retail banking, the presence of foreign players has been quite limited in Spain. Well, now there is an opportunity. In Spain, you know, the sector is suffering an important restructuration. The overhauling is going to take place, especially, you know, in the area of the saving banks, the famous Cajas de Ahorros. And these Cajas de Ahorros, well, that accounted for more than 50% of the banking industry, they have started to restructure and to be modified. So, you know, there is an opportunity. We are going to have in Spain, as I have said before, fewer players in the banking landscape, but much sounder and much safer and with a better corporate governance because of the flaws that you know, affected the corporate governance of the saving banks. This is going to disappear. This is something that we are going to modify in the future. And I think that you know, if we give you know, this clear landscape with better rules, with sounder players, with better provisioning, with much more clarity, I suppose and I hope that some international players will be interested on having a presence in Spain, despite the fact that for the banks, you know, this is not the best of the worlds, as you are fully aware.
Yes, there's one question there in the middle.
Buenos días, señor ministro. Good morning.
Please identify yourself. Huh?
My name is Andrés Orcajo. I'm a student at Georgetown University. Thank you very much for coming. So you identified part of the problem as you know, fiscal indiscipline for a long time. No, but Spain's main problem has always been private debt. We're probably around 400% of GDP on private debt, and what we're getting from Brussels is more of a Greek problem solution, while Spain's problem is, although our public finances have not been flawless, they're not, you know, like Greece's. So I'm just wondering, what is the solution to private debt, which leads to credit crunches? Thank you very much.
Any other question? Yes?
Thanks very much, Minister. James Daniel from the IMF. I wonder if you could speak a little about the potential risks that you see to your strategy. Where do you see the risk coming from? Is it coming from the economy? Is it coming from social pressure? Would it come from politics, the regions? Is it the unions or the employers? Mm-hmm. Where do you see the challenges for you in this very difficult job, Minister? And if I may also ask, on the external side, where do you see the challenges there? And more generally, what can the rest of the world do for you to help you achieve these goals? What can Europe do for you? What can other countries do for you? What would you like to see others do to make your job easier?
Maybe, Mr. Minister, I can take the prerogative of the floor to ask one question also myself, and that is and a little bit following up on the last question in terms of the rest of the world. The current account has become smaller, needs to become even smaller. Other current accounts that are in deficit, policy is trying to make them smaller. The U.S. current account, I think, for many years many observers have said has to become smaller. Well, that has some implications for others, for the surplus countries, and both inside Europe and worldwide. So maybe some remarks in terms of the world economy on that front would also be welcome.
Well, I will start for the last one. You know, the rebalancing of the world economy. You know, the countries with large current account deficits will start to reduce, and you know what happens with the surplus countries. Well, first of all, what I have to say is that you know the rebalancing in itself is an element of confidence. I think that you know the imbalance in the world economy was behind the crisis that we are living right now, that gave rise to situations that were totally, you know, unsustainable. And, you know, the perception that I have today is that, you know, this rebalancing is more or less taking place. And, with respect to the surplus countries, if we look, for instance, at Germany,
right.
Well, I think that in the case of Germany, I would not expect, expansionary policies in Germany. You have to take into consideration that the German population is aging, that they have to save. And perhaps, you know, the perception that I have is that, the effort of fiscal consolidation in other countries, you know, will be a little bit reduced in order to... to adjust, the fiscal consolidation process to, the new situation of a mild recession in Europe. So I would not expect, in the case of Europe, for instance, from the case of Germany, of the northern countries, expansionary policy in fiscal terms. What I would expect is that they will look for, a different pattern of, austerity implementation in the fiscal policy of the southern countries. So, I know that, it's a subtlety, but I think that it's an important subtlety in terms of policy implementation. But I think that, for instance, in the case of Germany, they have started to feel the pinch of, the recession in Europe. Well, they had negative growth in the fourth quarter. So, the export engine of the German economy is not going to be, what it used to be only one year and a half ago, because, the recession is there in the rest of Europe. For Germany, for instance, what happens in Italy and Spain is extremely important. They are very large and important markets for German exporters. So I think that we are fully aligned in that regard. Well, going to your question about the risks and the challenges, well, I think that there is one positive element, is that the political endorsement of the new government is very high. Well, it has a clear majority in the Spanish Parliament, and as I have said before, the Popular Party runs a majority of the regions. So, I think that in terms of political grounds, the Popular Party has a lot of power, a lot of capability, also a lot of responsibility. Because, I always say that responsibility goes, hand in hand with, your capability and the power that you have accumulated. No? So, on political grounds, I think that this is going to be a very important element. And, it's a very clear mandate that the Spanish population has given to the Popular Party to implement the reforms. And I think that the measures that we have taken over the first 2 months are a clear sign of that commitment and the compromise of the Popular Party with, these reforms and this agenda of reforms that I think that has been endorsed by the Spanish population. The problem, there are potential challenges everywhere. I do not see, the situation in Spain was so bad. The deterioration of the labor markets was so profound that I think that the Spanish population is, despite the fact that some of the measures that we have taken are not popular, I think that the Spanish population has been relieved because they have started to feel that there is a government that takes decisions. And they wanted to be led. And you can agree or disagree with the measures. What you cannot question is that, in 2 months, the Spanish government has taken bold actions that were not taken before. And I think that, this is element of relief in terms of, the Spanish population, because they want to be run by a government that is fully committed with this kind of reforms, because the alternative is something that we knew and that we have lived over the last 4 years. So, on political grounds, I could say that, these are not easy measures. To raise the personal income tax for the Popular Party, I can assure you, was not an easy decision. But, it's something that we have to do. And, I think that simultaneously, I think that the Spanish population has realized and fully acknowledges that, the government, they can be more or less in agreement with these measures, but that the government, at least, is taking, measures. And, I would say that there is a sign of relief for that. That's the perception that I have, despite the fact that you can agree or disagree. This is a different issue. From overseas, I think that, the European context is going to be vital for us. I think that, the second bailout program of Greece is important in order, for instance, to stem the contagion to Portugal that was there. Because if you look at the evolution of yield spreads over the last weeks, in the case of Spain, in the case of Italy, in the case of Ireland, we have seen a tightening of the spreads. But in the case of Portugal, we have seen a widening. But I think that is totally unfair. I think that, there is a clear difference between the Portuguese government and the Greek government. In the case of Portugal, there is a government that is willing to deliver and to put in place the reforms. And I think that at the end of the day, markets will acknowledge, this effort by the Portuguese authorities, no? And afterwards, we have approved the fiscal compact. I think that we will have to discuss the firewalls or the backstops, you can call it whatever you want. I think that the ECB is doing its part with an important injection of liquidity that, has created, much more comfort for the European banks that had funding difficulties that you're fully aware only 4 or 5 months ago. And I think that, the context in that regard has been modified. And simultaneously, the political element. Now, Spain and Italy, you have new governments that are regarded as much more serious and orthodox, executives. And I think that, something that, are steps in the correct direction. And despite the fact that the European Union is much better, acting preemptively than fixing the problems and the crisis, I think that we are taking steps in the correct direction. And finally, with respect to the leverage of the private sector, you are totally right. The problem of Spain is not public debt. The public debt ratio is quite low; it's below 70. But if you look at the private sector households, both households and corporations, the leverage is quite high. But I would recommend you to go a little bit into the details. The leverage of the households in Spain, of the families, is more or less in the average of Europe. And the problem is the level of debt, the level of leverage of the corporations. But if you go into the details, you will see that, the leverage is especially acute in the case of the real estate companies. So the rest of the corporations in Spain are not extremely leveraged. The problem has been concentrated on, developers and construction companies. The problem of Spain is that, I think that when we left the government in 2004, lending to developers was something a little bit above 70 billion euros. In 2008, before the bursting of the bubble in Spain, the lending to developers, to real estate companies, to construction companies, was 420. So, to give you an idea about the evolution of the credit, and that, you know, the real problem of the credit bubble in Spain and the property bubble in Spain was the property bubble. That, well, the Spanish banks increased dramatically their exposure to the construction and to the real estate sector. This is the sector that has to adjust. And I think that, you know, through the process of adjusting of prices of the assets, of the real estate assets, that has been, is going to be fostered through the accelerated provisioning that the new government has demanded to the banks, plus the restructuring of the construction sector. I think that the deleverage process will be accelerated, and this is something that is going to be needed. But the bulk of the problem of the leverage, of the excessive leverage of the Spanish, the excessive level of debt of the Spanish private sector, is fully concentrated on real estate and construction companies.
Thank you very much, Mr. De Guindos. I know you have a very packed schedule and you're heading out tomorrow morning or tonight.
No, just now, in 1 hour. I'm just heading to Mexico.
I thank you for having visited us. As you see, we've had a full house. I think we've had good questions, good discussions, an overview of the fiscal side, the private sector side, the current account and the global issues. We wish you luck.
Yes, because I want to read it.
And I think every country, there are similarities, but every country is a little bit different in the particular way that that the crisis has erupted and the way it is handling it. But I do believe Spain is a country with tremendous potential, and I'm pretty confident. Now, it's always difficult for an economist to make predictions, but if you come and visit us next year, things will have improved.
I will be very pleased to be
back. All right, thank you.